The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires. Hello and welcome back to the Truck and Driver podcast. I'm Dougie Rankin and I'm joined today by...
Niall Barker.
Where in the world are you this fine evening, Niall?
The delightful shite-all that is Clapham Lane Services.
Oh, lovely, M25.
Aye, we love it.
How much is it to park in there overnight? And what sort of time did you get in? Was it like all right for parking? Was it mobbed out?
Yeah, surprised actually. It's £35 on Snap for 24 hours, so for a service station in the southeast, that's actually quite reasonable when you think Thurrock are charging like 40, 45-ish, I think, last time I was there. And I get here about 5:30, 5:45, and there's a steady stream of wagons coming in now, but I managed to get an half-decent space. So far, there's nobody next to me. Well, I've got a rigid on one side, so he won't be much bother, and the space on the other side of me is up for grabs, so...
Ideal. I mean, there's not a lot of options to sort of park publicly when you're in that part of the world. You're kind of risking it a bit in some ways. I'm not aware of a lot of kind of good. So you can't dive off onto, you know, sort of the A road or the trunk road network and find some nice laybys set away back and things like that down in that part of the world. You're kind of limited with your options, really. So it's probably good that you've got in and got a decent spot in there overall.
Yeah, and well, I'm empty, so I've pulled the curtains on the trailer like right the way back. So if, you know, nothing to see, nothing to steal.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you up to down there?
Yeah, usual garden centre happening. So yeah, well, I'm not long since tipped the load off at a spot in Twickenham, then I'm on my way up to Dagenham tomorrow morning for load up for Manchester, and I can't load while 8 o'clock, so I could have got up there today and parked outside it, but I would have burned a 13 by about 20 minutes, and since I'm going to be sat outside by while 8 o'clock anyway, it didn't make really much any sense.
Yeah, you're best not to burn through your extended times and rests unnecessarily. Never a good idea.
Yeah, and also I wasn't really in the humour for attacking the Dartford Tunnel at 5:30.
No, that's it's never a fun bit as Dartford. No, depend even at completely random times it can be rammed out going over there. I can't imagine what it was like when there was only one crossing there during the times of the roadworks when they were extending it. Wow, that must have been something else.
Yeah, that would have been less than ideal.
Mm. You've been gone inside the M25.
Obviously Twickenham, it's round by Staines kind of area. I mean, not very far in, only like 30 minutes off of them. No, not even that, probably 20 minutes off of the motorway. And then where I'm collecting out of in the morning isn't far away from me, from the big Tesco. So like literally again, like 10, 15 minutes inside on the A13, which that can be a fun road as well if you hit it at the wrong time.
Yeah. What amazes me is when you're inside a lot of areas in the M25, is like how green and kind of rural it is inside the motorway, because all of it's classed as, you know, DVS, City of London and stuff, and there's certain places you can go to and it's marked as like London and you're like, yeah, okay, I'm on like a farm road here, this is weird.
Yeah.
But of course it's just such a vast, vast geographical area. You've got to make sure your trucks, if you're going anywhere near that part of the world, can you make sure that your truck's compliant lest you accidentally step off the M25 and inside?
Makes you wonder, like, you go into some places like, like Thurrock and, again, the aforementioned Dagenham, and you think, yeah, this is definitely in the city, but then you go you go out to like West London and especially like, you know, around Finchley and area, and you think it's like a village in the sticks. Wonder.
I guess it's like there's London gone. And then there's City of London as it goes all the way, as it extends all that way out. Yeah, I've had a few deliveries sort of down there where you're in sort of Kent or area, and you're like, yeah, this is, you're nowhere near sort of this intense urban sprawl, but it starts to get like really quite stressful. What's that tunnel that they've been mucking about with? Is it the Blackwall Tunnel or something?
Yeah, I think they've been messing about with that, and then they've opened another one, which I think, you know, they've opened the new one, which you have to pay for, but then the Blackwall, which was previously free, they've now put restrictions on, so you have to use the one to pay for it.
Mm. Yeah, I remember coming through, it must have been Blackwall at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and the traffic was just whoosh, multiple, just full of vehicles every lane, and it's it's crazy the amount of traffic around that part. I'm just looking at Google Maps on London at the moment right now, and there's loads of like roadworks and crashes and closures here, there, and everywhere on it. Because I mean, fair play to anybody who goes in there and encounters that every single day. But of course there are. I mean, there's fleets of tippers and everything that are located right inside sort of the central parts of London that run about there all day and probably never get to see the speed limit or for days at a time.
Right. Yep. That's not a job I'd like to do, running eight-wheelers around London all day.
No, not one of the, fair play to anybody that does it. I saw a lot of traditional eight-wheelers still going about there when I was down, you know. I hadn't seen a lot of the kind of like Scania L-series type tippers going about. But I guess you need like the robust equipment to do the job, really. You're still running on and off of building sites and stuff, and it's not the easiest place to get in and out, a lot of them, so, you know. Speaking of Scania L series, we're going off topic a little bit. Do you know that Scania have just introduced their new engine?
I did not know that.
Yeah, they're just introducing it. It's the new 11 litre super, which slots in between the 9 litre and the 13 litre. And curiously, it's a 5-cylinder engine. So what they've done is they've gone and lopped a cylinder off the end of the 13 litre to make it 85 kilos lighter. And this engine, check my notes, it goes from 350, 390 to 430 horsepower with 1800, 2000 and 2200 newton meters of torque respectively. So it is largely going to be a sort of rigid engine. Surprised they maybe didn't go a little bit higher with the horsepower on that to make it attractive to more sort of tractor unit operators, you know, maybe shove it up to like 450 for the guys that really want every last bit of payload. And 85% modularity with the 13 litre, so loads of components transfer over, and it's supposed to be 7% better on fuel than even the 9 litre. So, you know, that 430 could make an interesting option for a lot of 8-wheeler tipper guys. Who will previously have been going for the 13, but you know, 11 litres used to be, you know, a really common engine size in tractor units, and everything's kind of standardised on 13 litres now. You know, like if you look back, there were loads of MANs with sort of 440s with the D20. I think that was like a 10.8 litre engine, which was very common in tractor units. Same with DAF with the their XD is 11 litre only, it goes to 450 horsepower, so it'll be interesting to see how the new Scania 11 litre super sort of compares with that. I guess the supermarkets would be quite interested in it, but I'm going to be going test driving the new 11 litres at the end of this month. Scania have invited us out to go and have a shot of some of them, so I'll be able to report back on that. But what were the earliest trucks? You drove a DAF CF, didn't you?
Yeah, my first allocated wagon after passing my test, I had a 19 plate for like 2 months. Then I got an identical 69 plate, which I had for, I don't know, about a year. I liked it. It was only the 11 litre 450s because we're on supermarket work. Yeah. Then
so I was going to say
we weren't heavy all the time, but like if you have a double decker on them, then yeah, you got quite heavy. I mean, I liked it. Everyone else in the ad hated them, but I liked it. I didn't mind it.
What did they not like them for? Any specific reasons? just because it was a CF, because it was like small and fleety.
Pretty much, yeah. I didn't mind it.
No, that 11 litres are a decent engine. But say you don't see that many tractor units. It's all kind of standardising on 13 litres now and more towards pushing away from your sort of your 400 mark stuff. A lot of places are going towards 500s just because it's such a psychological benchmark for drivers, eh? You're like, whoa, hey, I've got a 500. As opposed to anything else below that, you're like, oh, I wish it was a 500.
Yeah, you see a lot of them now, like even a few select 8-wheelers are 500s, and it's like, you know, like not even 5 years ago, you'd be bombing about in like a 360 Scania with like just like your standard 4x4 in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, since when did an 8-wheeler need that?
Yeah, just I guess when the sheer cost of them now, by the time you've totted everything up, you're like, you know what, I might as well just tick the option and go a little bit more for the power and make it just effortless. Because everything's jumped so much. But yeah, I mean, not long ago at all, 340, 360, 380, they were all your 8-wheeler power outputs now. And now it's quite common to see, you know, Scania R500s, Volvos, the sort of your FMXs with 500 in them. And yeah, progress overall, I guess. I had, well, I just spent a week there because obviously I'd finished up with Rocksoft, so I'd spent a week in a Volvo FH from 2019, which obviously is Rocksoft tag axle truck with rear steering trailers, all party piece stuff. So this was a standard midlift, standard triaxle trailer, and I had completely forgotten how to drive. It's like, I just, you know, when I hear people going banging on about tags and like how good they were and how essential it was to working, the difference, I was always like, oh, yeah, whatever, you know. I can do it just the same in a midlift, what are you on about? But that was what, 5 weeks I think I spent with a tag, and then as soon as I was out, that was me. I was like a raving tag zealot after that. It was like the difference, because you've got a tag, ain't you? Your Volvo's a tag.
Yeah, she is. And since I started out, I was like you know, big up midlift supremacy. But then now I've had this thing for like 8 months now, 7-8 months. Like even in town, it's just handy. Like the drop I did earlier on, it involved backing in off of the road, and it's just nice. Like once you get the trailer angled round, like if you put the weight transfer on the back axle, it just swings round. Like you can't do most things, but like stuff that in a midlift you'd struggle with and have to straighten up, you can do an Iwana in this. And same again, if I have a day out in a midlift, you'd think I never sat in a lorry before.
Yeah, I was really surprised at just how quickly you can get locked in to something. And I was really kind of, all those Rocksoft trailers had like a party piece, are really unusual. You're not going to find them in many places, those clever rear steer outfits and combined with the tag. And I was, yeah, just so locked in with it that after like the first day, I was like, my anxiety was like pinging like off the charts, because I was like going right, coming out of junctions, turning and watching. I'm like, oh, I'm going to pull out a little bit further, because it was just cutting in. I wasn't getting the cut in that I was expecting. And there was one drop that I'd gone to in the morning at a place, and the guy had said, oh, you'll just need to spin it round here. And I was looking at it and I was like, spin it round here? And I was like, yeah, just spin it round here. And I'm like, are you sure about this? I'm like, do they not usually turn round down there? He said, no, it's all busy down there. So I looked at it and I was like, I don't like the look of this. So I actually went and took the Susies off, shoved the shunt button in to turn it. And you know when you're doing one of those turns and you're watching the trailer and it's juddering backwards? Because it turns that tight, that's what it was like doing. And thankfully the trailer wasn't like, didn't have very much on it, but I was like, whoa. I'm glad that I did, because I have snagged Susies on the ratchets on a trailer twice in the past, and I don't intend to do it a third time if I can possibly avoid it. So yeah, the shunt button trick worked a treat. Yeah, after that, I was all right. I got locked back in it again. I was like, yeah, remember that everything you've done pretty much up until that point, you've hardly any driving in tags really, wasn't a standard triaxle midlift outfit. And it was all right, you know? it was I was able to get by with it again. But yeah, you've got to watch with chucking drivers between from one truck to another with different equipment when they behave so. When they behave so differently like that. And there are advantages to the midlift as well. That Volvo sat much more comfortably on the road and it was less twitchy, especially with the axle up, than the Scania was when you're like going, you know, up and down twisty A roads, down the Scottish borders, up in the Scottish Highlands and stuff. The midlifts, they certainly do handle better. It's not an open and shut case that one's definitely better than the other.
Yeah, that's like the one thing I dislike about this. When it's fully freighted, lovely and comfortable, but then when it's empty, it bounces and nods around. It's like a freaking wobbly head on the dash. And then also one thing. Well, there's a reason why everyone has black mudguards on the tag axle.
Yeah.
If you go down a bit of a ramp, you end up scraping the chassis of the trailer, depending on what you've got on. I mean, with the flatbed on, it doesn't scrape, so that does sit higher, but with a curtain on, I have to watch. That was the first thing we did when we got this truck. Like, it literally come down the driveway into the yard, we took the painted guards off and put the black ones on it.
Yeah, painted mud guards are for shows only.
Yes.
It's pretty much unavoidable. Yeah, that Volvo is a 2019 Euro 6 Step D FH500, well-known truck for being good all-rounders, and yeah, Globetrotter XL, so plenty of space in the cab as well. I found that it's crazy, it really is crazy just how much like technology in trucks has advanced in the last just 5 years. Because if you go to like the newer, everything now, it's all got twin digital touch screens in it. And, you know, car manufacturers are getting told to go and wind their technology back a little bit because there's too much touchscreen stuff going on there. And in some ways, it's nice to have a little bit more simplicity and not have everything digitized. Although I do think that Volvo have struck a really nice balance with that. I do like the touchscreen controls and the amount of data and information you can get out of them is really good on them. And your heating and ventilation controls, a lot of the essential stuff is still on buttons in the Volvo.
Yeah, that's the best thing about this. Like, all the important things, like, you know, me transfer, me lift axle, me diff lock, and, heating controls, that's all where it should be. And then the only thing that's really on the touchscreen is your tachograph information, your radio, and your nav, which, I mean, well, we've had touchscreen nav since the beginning of time, so that's hardly a new thing. And yeah, same as you say, it's just nicely balanced. Like, there's, like, the new Mercs and the new Scanias where everything is on the touchscreen. It's just like, No, we haven't really got the time of day to be fanning about going through six different menus just to pick the lift axle up.
I do really like the tachograph information that the new Volvo and the Renault is basically the same system. The tacho information that you can get on that, because it tells you absolutely everything, like what you've done over your 3 week spreads, and like how many reduced daily rests you've got, when you're going to need to take 24 hours off, and everything. You really can't go wrong with it at all, which is a good thing. But then again, There's more stuff coming in like all the time in the coming years. We're going to have more stuff that's going to beep at us and more stuff that we're going to have to switch off. Do you have the speed limit warning?
Yeah, this has the speed limit warning. It beeps at me constantly, and it had the thing where the predictive powertrain control would say if you go, it would like alter the cruise control for you.
Mm.
And speaking of the predictive powertrain control, that is the main thing I dislike about this truck.
What do you mean, the cruise control, like?
Well, it's got the similar system to the Merc.
Yes, it kind of like drives itself and sort of semi-autonomously, yeah, like it'll speed up and slow down between roundabouts, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I tried, I've given it a chance, I've tried to let it do its thing, but then say, if you're coming up to a roundabout and you like tap the foot brake, I drive this, I always have the exhaust brake fully down, so like as soon as I knock off the cruise, it starts slowing down. Then there's been times where I've had to watch it where like I've had to tap the brake, but then it hasn't cancelled the cruise because the predictive powertrain has taken over. And it's like, hang on a minute, why are we not slowing down? You just have to use the button and kill the cruise control manually. It, you know, it's once you're used to it and you know how to work with it rather than work against it, it's not too bad. But it's just, you know, it's just one of them things. I mean, well, I suppose everything to a point is going to have that at some point.
Yeah. It's the complexity in trucks now. It's really, I mean, so many drivers won't get any sort of handover information or details in about how any of this stuff works, and you've kind of got to suss it all out for yourself. And that's going to be getting like more and more difficult, especially when you consider like a lot of drivers, you know, might not be that technologically astute, as it were, and there's all these different clever functions and features in the truck, like adaptive cruise, predictive cruise, all that's like viewed still greatly with suspicion, even your emergency braking systems, stuff like that, because the early systems weren't very good and would go off at the if they saw a seagull or a crisp packet. People still don't like them now. I do like in the Volvo how it puts the red indicator up on the windscreen, but it puts the red light on the screen if it thinks something's drawing closer to you. I think that's a handy little feature just to draw your attention to stuff in traffic when people randomly start slowing down.
Yeah, and also on the version 5 where it's got the little arrows on the mirror, and I've noticed that if you're passing another truck, as soon as the red arrow goes off, that's usually about when people flash you in, so it's kind of a nice guide.
Yeah, the proximity sensors, especially
when it's dark. And you know, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of things I absolutely love about this truck. It's one of the nicest things I've ever had the pleasure to drive. There's just like the one thing I dislike about it is the predictive powertrain, but then it's one of them you get used to it, and like say, as soon as you press zero on the cruise control, everything's off, you're back to manual again, which is quite a good thing. Because one thing I have noticed when I've been letting it do its thing, it's not very good at telling the difference whether I'm fully freighted or whether I'm empty. Like you get halfway around a roundabout with a high load of timber on, and then it starts accelerating because you're nearly around the island, and you just think, hang on a minute, we're not ready for that yet.
I had that with a Mercedes. I had the top of the range Mercedes 630 back in 2021, and it had the PPV on it, and I was trying it round the roundabouts all the way around Stoke one night, and I found that it was quite impressive, like the way that it was like speeding up and slowing down, and I was just like kind of steering it pretty much, but I always found I had a decker on, and like you say, with like a high load, I was this is just a bit much here. And then I'm trying it on like A roads as well, and I was like, you know what, I am the driver, I'm just going to drive the thing to the best of my ability.
Yes,
is yours a 500? What engine's in yours?
It's a 540, this one. It's not a dual clutch, just a standard 540. But then, to be fair, even though it's a non-dual clutch, it still goes well enough. It's still ideal on the gears.
Yeah, like, it's still an I-shift. I mean, back, the I-shift was always right for the start. You could jump in a version 3 now and drive it, and you'd be like, yep, you wouldn't be searching to correct it for wrong gear shifts, really.
Yeah, I can confirm that, because I had a version 3 briefly, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I drove quite a lot of them. Going back 10 years now, when they were everywhere. They were first automatic that I drove, where I was like, all right, now yeah, I get it now. I get why people like these so much, because they just it just did what you wanted to do, and you didn't have to think about it. Unlike a lot of the AStronics at the time, where you were like, if you're having a bad day, sometimes you're just like, right, it's gone into manual mode and I'll shift it myself.
Yeah, when I worked on the tippers and I had a 65 plate MAN with the AStronic in it, that was constantly in manual mode. It might as well have just been a straight paddle shift, that one.
Fun and games. But anyway, aside from work stuff and all that, how are you getting on with your ERF? If you want to remind listeners what it is that you've got, what you've been up to with it.
Yes, well, bit of a story. Many moons ago, Mother said that we were too old to have toy trucks, so when I could afford it, I said, watch me, and then bought a full-size one. So I had an EC10 for 2 years that now lives with a friend of mine, and now I have an EC14 4x2 flat roofer. It was originally a 340, but it's been turned to a 400. It's got a 9-speed road ranger in it. and come out of the Air Force, so it's basically brand new. It's got, actually, I've just got out of it because I've just got back from tractor fest in it. It's got 107,000 kilometers on it. From for a 30-year-old truck, is basically nothing.
That's just crazy to find one with that. What a find. You think as well, a 14-litre engine with 340 horsepower, like the way they would turn those engines, I mean, obviously you could turn them way, way up. The standard output of that engine was 525 horsepower when they electrified it all. What more? Because there's like two different kind of versions of the engine. Is yours a kind of more mechanical one?
Yeah, mine's the manual one. The EC10 was a select, so I had such luxuries as cruise control on that one. But then this one, I've got the obligatory stick that you wedge under the dash as cruise control.
I wonder what did the Air Force use it for then? Was it like pulling an exhibition trailer or something? Mm. It seems weird that they would go for a 14-litre to do that.
No, well, as far as I'm aware, all it did in its working life was just pull a fuel tank around the base. It never actually got registered to the road until 2021, and the person who bought it out of the Air Force, they ended up restoring it because it's painted a very nice cream and black with a black chassis, whereas before it was Air Force blue, on the inside of the doors and under the bonnet, it's still blue. Then they couldn't get it registered because the truck was American owned. I've got the American title for it. It came off the American base at Tobury St. Edmunds, and the EVLA is like, well, if it was foreign owned, then it should have an import mark on it. And it's like, well, it hasn't, because it was actually British made, and it hasn't, and it's been on British soil technically. And the guy just gave up on it. And then the guy who I bought it off at it, and with the help of Revs, the famous ERF club, managed to get it on the road. And when I turned up at Kelsall last year and the guy at Rev seen which truck it was, he says, I wished I never seen that bloody thing again, because it was that much of a chew to get it registered.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, at least you've managed to get it registered. How does it...
Well, no.
What model year is it?
Slight note on that. It wasn't me who got it registered. The lad I bought it off managed to get it on the road somehow. And. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember buying that. It went up for sale on the Saturday afternoon, and first thing Sunday morning, I was at his garage, and by the following Sunday, I was driving it home.
Yeah, well, I would imagine that wouldn't have hung around for long. That's for sure. Yeah, but what year is it?
It's 1995. It's on an M-Ridge. I think it was one of the last ones that had like the original EC dash with the handbrake on the floor, so to speak, with the canvas on it. Not like my green one had the handbrake on the dash and the carpet floor.
Yeah, it's got the angled dash on it rather than the one with the little bit with the radio and the three dials with it. And then it
drops
out, the facelift version.
Yeah, that's the one. I remember driving that home. I bought it from St. Helens, and as soon as I come out of the guy's yard, we're onto the East Lancs Road, which is just like traffic lights every 100 yards. And me thinking, it's like, I've driven a twin splitter in the old lorry. How hard can a 9-speed be? I could not get a frigging gear the entire way, and I got caught at every fucking red light. I was livid. By the time I got to the motorway, my brother rang me. He's like, having fun? He's like, I can't find a gear with a white stick on this thing. What am I doing?
What's the trick to driving it then with a Road Ranger in it then? Do you just take it up to a certain revs every time and then just shift it and it goes?
Yeah, you can't rush it, especially not a 9-speed. You can't rush it like you can a twin splitter. It's the truck basically says, we're doing it my way, you can like it. It's kind of like driving an old Leyland bus with a pre-select in it. Like, you have to give it a gap between gear changes. If you try and force it in, it just says, no, we're not playing. And you look like a bit of a dick trying to find a gear on a roundabout, just making all kinds of funny noises.
What's it like taking it down the box then as well? How do you get, how do you do that? Do you need to like double the clutch it or anything like that?
Well, I suppose, you can double clutch it. I suppose that's the way you're meant to do it. But then, I don't really use the clutch. I don't use the clutch on it at all, because I think it just drives nicer. And then, especially the same outer gear, blip it up to the revs that it's meant to be at. And then nine times out of ten, it goes in.
Aye, deal. Do you run it with a trailer on it?
I did. Last two seasons, I ran it with a low loader with me tractors on. But then I've not long since sold my low loader because, well, it was had a bit of a to-do with it. I took it for MOT and it found out it needed a bit more work in it than I was willing to pay for, and I also had the time for. So, and also where I keep the lorry and my tractors in one place, I keep the trailer in a different place because the guy's yard's not big enough. So it was a case of I have to like go to one place, get the truck, drive 20 minutes down the road, get the trailer, come back, load the tractors up on the road, and then go. Early on in the year, I had a bit of a moment where I was cutting a load of crap out of my life, and the trailer was one of the things to go. So now it's a case of just go to the shed, get the lorry out, chuck my crap in it, and go.
So you're just running it as a tractor unit at the moment. You're like borrowing a trailer for your tractors.
Yeah. No, for now, the tractors aren't really going anywhere, and well, one of the tractors is getting put up for sale because it's a bit too slow to use on the road, whereas the other one can stay because I can safely road run that because it's a bit quicker. And that one also cuts the grass at the shed.
I do. What kind of tractors are they?
First one is Horton Major, 1959 E1A. And then the second one is 1948 Horton E27N. And for the tractor nerds, it's the TVO version.
Right.
And it's got the low speed box in it. So it does in top gear with the throttle pulled all the way out, it does a grand total of 7 miles an hour.
Oh.
At least on the Major, I can hit 20 miles an hour nicely on that, so I don't mind using that one on the road.
Aye, that's a bit more kind of like it, aye. There we go. So, where you do? You out somewhere at the weekend with the tractors or something? Tractor Fest, did you say, before we were recording?
Yes, I went up to Newby Hall at Ripon for Tractor Fest, and funnily enough, it was a special occasion. That it was the, I think, 90th or 100th anniversary of the E27, so they had all the dark blue Fordsons lined up going up towards the house, and they had pretty much everything else. Like, if you know, they had classic cars, classic bikes, tractors, every kind of conceivable tractor you could see. They had they had classic wagons there. There was even a few buses there for those kind of people.
Aye, doing good weekend then.
Aye, yeah, it was a cracking weekend, and to say you get people now that, you know, saying they need this, that, and other to go in a truck. That EC is a flat roofer, and all it basically has is the bottom bunk, and it is actually a really comfortable truck to sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
And I can sit up on the bottom bunk, and my head doesn't touch the roof. I mean, there's a bit of a technique to put your jeans on in the morning, so I suppose the big cabs do have that. You know, you can actually stand up and put your jeans on somewhat dignified, but. When you're coming back from the beer tent half cut and you just want somewhere to crawl into and sleep the sins away, it does the job.
Yeah, how far we have come.
Yes, when folk have a look around it and it's like, I used to spend weeks away in one of these way back when, and I'm like,
yeah, but that was.
I can kind of see how, but also like how.
I guess people carried less stuff probably back then as well, in a way. I don't know. But it's certainly a different world, that, because I mean, a lot of the time you would be delighted to get, you know, a full size, full width, full size, big engine tractor unit with a full size bunk in it. I mean, even like into the 90s, obviously we were well into the era of your Globetrotters and stuff like the Renault Magnum was out by then. But there were a lot of guys just, you know, tramping away in standard flat roof tractor units like that. And that's just the way that it was. We're always, guess what? We're always progressing with things as microwaves have become more and more of a standard part of specification. Inverters and nighttime aircon are starting to become the next sort of desirable options that you'd want to have in trucks.
Yeah, I mean, the microwave in this, it's an absolute godsend. I mean, I don't use it every night, but I use it like once or twice in a week. But for that once or twice in a week, it's handy to have.
Oh, yeah. They're becoming near to standard now. I think you'd be, in a lot of ways, you're just as well fitting an inverter, a good high-power inverter, because then that gives you the option of just using a domestic microwave as you want. And a lot of drivers use air fryers now. It's not something that I've that would ever occur to me. I don't own an air fryer, but a lot of people that use them say they're absolutely fantastic. And they work a treat in the lorry as well. You can cook up all sorts of great stuff with one.
Yeah, I've seen a few people do that. I've even seen guys have like slow cookers in the truck. Like they, you know, if they load up somewhere, they'll put whatever it is they're having in the slow cooker, and then whilst they're doing 4 hours up the road to get to where they're going, by the time they get there, dinner's ready.
Yeah, do you, listener, have an air fryer in your truck or a slow cooker? Get in touch. What do you cook up? Because I tell you what, I am so unimaginative within that I'm cooking. Like I'm just terrible on the road, really, for eating out of tins or sandwiches. A lot of sandwiches, like make sandwiches and just stuff them in the fridge and then munch away at them through the week. Yeah, I'd probably get sick of it if I did it for long enough. But there's certainly more options there for drivers than ever before if you want to cook food in the cab. But anyway, any other... Where are you going for the rest of the week? Do you know? You got anywhere good plans? You said you were going back up north, did you?
Yes, well, I'm... it's actually... I know Clackett Lane is a bit of a jump, but it's kind of handy for where I'm going. I'm only 45 minutes from where I'm going in the morning. That's loading, going up to Macclesfield, which I'll probably get there sort of like 1 o'clock-ish maybe, and then deliver there, and then chances are I'll be back over towards home for either something for the next day or something to run off with.
Ideal. Oh, that's all right then. Have you been up the A9 recently, up towards Inverness? North of Perth?
About a fortnight, 3 weeks ago, I went up that way.
The dual carriageway that's been extended down to Perth, you've got sort of about 10 miles of that now. So we've got that there. And then up the top near Inverness, they've started dueling another section, which has got a reasonable bit of roadworks in it. But you're looking at the section that they're doing and you're thinking, I don't think between the end of our driving careers we're going to see that fully dueled. And I'm surprised that why are there so many lorry drivers that still don't drive at 50 miles an hour on the A9? I mean, most places people just bounce along on the limiter anyway on A roads in Scotland if it's possible to do it. But every time I'm on the A9, there's somebody doing like 45. I'm like, clearly you are paid by the hour and going into double time soon.
Yeah, although one thing I have noticed, especially early morning, if you get caught behind a Scottish wagon on the A9, they usually flick the indicator on and let you by. If it's an English wagon, they don't really do that. And I'm not making generalisations. That's just what I've seen. I've done enough trips up that road. Although, especially now, silly season's on. If you're a tourist in a car going up the A9, the 50 signs are for trucks. You are allowed to do 60. Do 60 and get out of our way because we're still at work and we got shit to do. Oh, my PSA is over.
Yeah. It's getting that way with all the caravans and camper vans out now and that as well. Now, modern camper vans, probably, you know, they'd sit and cruise at 90 mile an hour all day if you wanted to, but there you go. Well,
yeah, I mean, last week I was down to set off for a run to excuse me. Last week I was down to set off for a run to Wick first thing Monday morning, and then that didn't come through. I ended up going to Cowan and Beath and Dunfermline instead. And I'm thinking, like, as much as I like going to Wick, at least I ain't gonna sit on the A9 all day. Like at least going to Dunfermline and Cowan and Beath, it's like motorway dual carriageway all the way there.
Hard grind that up and down the A9, trunking up and down that all week. You know, you get to know it like the back of your hand, like, but it's compared to doing like the M6, you've got to be switched on all the time. Stuff on that road, eh? Fair play to anybody that's doing that. You have my respect. But I don't know what plans I've got. Yeah. I've got a rake of writing work to catch up on, so I'd various features and things to organise. So I'm going to be cracking on with that, and then I'll see, because I've got that Scania driving event, and MAN have invited us out to Germany to go and drive stuff as well. Something interesting coming from MAN. Don't know what that is, so I will have to update you on that when I find out. But aye. We'll wrap this one up, I think. Let you get off and enjoy the rest of your evening. Thanks for listening in, guys. Take care, everybody, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Yearly, bye.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tires. Fortune Tires and International Tires, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.